With the culture changing at breakneck speed, we need to know the culture so that we can contextualize the unchanging good news of the gospel in ways that can be heard by a changing world. As a result, we talk a lot about the need for relevance in our churches and youth ministries. Is it possible that our commitment to relevance can lead us to focus too much on forms, with the result that we forfeit our knowledge of the gospel? And can we become so committed to relevance that we find ourselves falling into theological compromise and relativism? These are important questions for those who minister in today's world. We'll be discussing relevance, relativism, and a whole lot more with veteran youth ministry experts Dr. Duffy Robbins and Dr. Marv Penner on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, it's another episode of Youth Culture Matters, and Jason is not able to join us today, but that's okay. That's all right, because I've got two of my best buddies from the world of youth ministry here. Marv Penner's joining us from Kelowna in British Columbia, Western Canada. Duffy Robbins is joining us from Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, living in the shadows of Valley Forge. And we're just going to have a fun conversation today about youth ministry. We've had some things we've been chatting about before we went on here, and we're going to continue the conversation. These are things I love talking to these guys, because over the years we've been able to bounce ideas back and forth. And what's great about it is these guys have so much experience in the world of youth ministry that I think great wisdom comes out of that. Plus, they've been able to see the long view of youth ministry over their years of doing this, and changes that have taken place not only in the culture but in the church and in our youth ministry world as well, for better and for worse. So we'll have some conversation about that. I don't know, what's the weather like up there in Kelowna today?
It could not possibly be better.
I knew you'd say that. Yeah,
looking for something in the high 70s, low 80s. The blossoms are popping. The grass is green. It's as good as it gets. I'm putting my boat in the water this afternoon, so that's on my agenda when we get done here.
No kidding.
Awesome.
You know, it just doesn't matter whether it's the middle of winter or summer. You can ask Marv, tell me about what it's like up there, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. Nobody's more positive than Marv Penner. That's what I love about Marv.
It's true. That's absolutely true about Mark.
Yeah. He could be walking across nails and just talking about how great it is. So,
he's an insufferable liar about these things. But that's
yeah. He's just positive. That's a great thing. And Duffy, you're in Phoenixville, not far from us. It's getting up to about 85, 87 here.
So. We're hoping to put a boat in the water today. Then we realize, wait a minute, we don't have a boat.
Yeah, that's kind of
having a fantastic day.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this, you know, since summer's here and the heat is on. Well, summer's almost here. The heat's on where we are as we record today. And it got me thinking, Chris and I were talking about favorite songs of the summer. Do you guys, is there a song that comes on the radio? It could be old, could be newer, that reminds you of summer? Do you guys have a favorite summer song? I know I do. What?
Hot Fun in the Summertime by Sly and the Family Stone.
You stole mine. That's
or
it.
Or California Girls by the Beach Boys.
Okay, California Girls by the Beach Boys. That's a good one. Another one. How about Mungo Jerry? Remember what he sang, Duffy? I know you know
him. Yeah, but I always, in the summertime. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's a good one. When you hear that beat, you know, it makes you think of summer.
Yeah. No.
Have you heard, speaking of Hot Fun in the Summertime, you know the Beach Boys did a version of that.
No.
You haven't heard that? You've got to hear that. It's a good one. A little bit slower, but it's good. It's got those good Beach Boys harmonies. And then other favorite group that's done that song is my Philly group. You know who that is, Chris?
No.
Who's my Philly group? Hall & Oates. They did a July 4th concert up in New York City in the shadow of the Statue of Liberty back, I think, in 1987. and there's a YouTube video of them singing that while fireworks go off around the Statue of Liberty. It's just awesome. Marv, what's yours? You have a favorite Canadian?
It takes me back to the days when I used to ride my motorcycle in the summer, headphones or the speakers going, and good old Tom Petty. Life is a highway. That takes me back to the summertime.
Oh, that's awesome. So now we know you have a boat, you've had a motorcycle. Yeah. Duffy, how long do you think it'll be till he mentions the airplane? I think that's coming soon.
Later in the program.
We'll try to find a way to sneak that in. Chris, do you have a favorite summer song?
I gave you
plenty of time to think about this. Yeah. I told you about this early this morning. Like, I'm gonna pop this question on you. You don't have one?
No, I don't. I couldn't think of one, actually.
Okay, all right. Well, be thinking about it while we're talking. If you want to interrupt, just throw it in. That'd be great. So I want to ask you guys, before we jump into a conversation about youth ministry, both of you have some big changes going on in your lives. And I'm going to start with you, Duffy, because, you know, Marv and I have been able to watch this thing unfold over the last couple of years with you, and it's a beautiful thing. And tell us, you know, what you're doing, the transition you're making after 35 years at Eastern University.
Yeah, big deal here, 35 years at Eastern, and my last lecture was Tuesday a week ago. And now, beginning in the fall, I will start teaching at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Beautiful place. Joining a wonderful team of colleagues there. It's a school that is very intentional in their evangelical focus, and a place in which I'm excited. It was a great ride at Easter Monday night. Actually, there was a big, they kind of gathered youth ministry alumni from over the years, and that was really awesome. And my colleagues there, Eduardo Ramirez and Daryl Pearson and Clinton Dowdy and Eric Crayhansel, have been a great team to work with. But I decided it was time to move. And so now Grove City, we're going to help them kind of launch a Christian. They've already got a Christian ministry major, but it's very young. And I think this is sort of their effort to really be intentional. They're actually hiring two of us full time in Christian ministry. They'll be starting in the fall. And it's been fun because I can already see my enrollment for my intro to youth ministry class. And what's really cool is how many people I've talked with who I didn't know this, but they said, "Oh yeah, I went to Grove City," and I just realized what a great legacy that school has, and so it'll be fun to join that team and be a part of that story. So yeah, it starts in the fall. If you have a high school student who's considering school, you should definitely have them check out Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. I would love to meet you if you come on campus.
So you're making the move from Eastern Pennsylvania to Western Pennsylvania.
We are selling our house. Yeah. I mean, we are packing. I mean, literally yesterday I finished packing up my office, and the only event that remains is commencement and baccalaureate this weekend. And huge. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, we bought a house out there. We're putting our house on the market this week, and so yeah, it's a big transition.
What's this going to do to your football allegiances?
It's only a matter of time until he hates the Steelers as much as we did.
Oh man, watch what you say. We got some Pittsburghers watching on Facebook Live right now.
I think that it's going to be hard to ever leave Eagles. I started to say it's going to be hard to love the Steelers, but it is going to be hard to ever stop loving the Eagles. I mean, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
But what's going to be hard is trying to follow them from out there. But I'll probably have to do some NFL Live app or something that allows me to watch those games. I mean, even now, I hardly ever get to watch them live because I'm usually traveling.
I was going to say that. So talk about that, because this is one of the best things I love about you. You'll be traveling, you'll DVR the game, and you might not watch it for, like, how many days?
Well, the problem is, here's the bottom line is this. The overriding principle is this. I don't want to know anything about the game until I watch it.
Right.
So I want to watch it as if it's live, even if I'm watching it at 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, and it was a Sunday game. I basically have to turn off or just not use my phone until I get to watch it. Because you, Walt, will go, oh my gosh, can you believe that?
I know. I need a friend that I can like text to. And Marv, yeah. Marv's well, always doing that from Canada.
Yeah. Right.
But Marv doesn't like to weigh in until the Eagles are teetering. They're hanging on the ropes and they're about to hit him with a knockout punch. And then he just throws it in your face. And I got to say, they're going to pull this out, Marv.
And it usually claims the other.
And they team. Usually do.
Yeah.
But when I get out of the airplane, like if I think the pilot is going to say, well, folks, if you're interested in the score of the game, I turn up my earphones and essentially make my ears bleed and fill with blood so that I cannot hear anything. And then I even have to do that. I have to do that. And with my hands over my ears. And then the last gauntlet through which I must travel is the concourse, because, of course, it's the game's on at all the bars, the TVs. And so if it's live, I mean, I'm really in it. Because if I go in at, if the game started at 1, I get in at 2:30 or 3, then, you know, it's in the middle of the game. I want to watch it from the beginning as if it's live. And so... So yeah, I mean, I take that very, very seriously. I've told guys that, like in my discipleship group, I said, if I were that intentional about purity of the eyes, it would be awesome. Like it would just be amazing vow of purity, and I think I aspire to try to protect that clarity in all areas of life.
You know, I love this because I asked this simple question and this explanation.
I'm not quite done. I'm not quite finished, Dan. Can we do another podcast?
Yeah. But let's. I want to follow up on this because, you know, I ask these questions and the explanation is always so well thought out. And for a while, I just thought, you know, like on Sundays, you didn't like me, or you didn't like me for 2 or 3 days after because you wouldn't answer emails and you wouldn't read my texts and you wouldn't take my phone calls. And it was all because of this, you know, love for the Eagles and wanting to watch it.
Delayed gratification.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I don't want to say anything that would spoil anything. Have you watched the Super Bowl yet?
I've heard a lot of buzz.
Yeah, okay. Won't say anything. Marv, don't say anything.
Yeah.
All right. And this is the whole thing where, so Duffy and I, this is great. Duffy and I do this we co-mentor along with this friend of ours who's a younger fellow, Adonis Vidu, who's a Romanian, and who, by the way, has been hassling us through social media all about the Celtics and the Sixers. And by the way, we're recording this a couple weeks before it comes out, so who knows what the outcome of that will be. But Adonis is sending these. But anyway, so the first year we're together, we're just getting to know Adonis. About 2 days into it, he pulls me aside, and he says to me, Duffy is a peculiar fellow. And I just thought that was like the best, you know, descriptor. I just thought it was so funny. Yeah, that, you know, is this kind of stuff, you know, as Adonis is learning this, which I love this about Duffy. You know, everything's so well thought out. So, yeah. So we got sidetracked from gross.
I think it's called obsessive compulsive.
It could be. I don't know. We may have to talk. We may have to bring a counselor in to talk about this, but. Yeah, so, well, we'll be praying for you when you go to Pittsburgh. By the way, you know, great, great things happening out there in Pittsburgh with youth ministry. We have so many friends out there. You know, I was out there for 7 years working, and I'm actually really excited, Duffy, that you're going to be out there in the midst of that, and folks out there are going to benefit from that, from your presence greatly. So,
That's one of the reasons I'm really pumping. Travis Deans and the stuff.
Yeah, I was going to mention Travis.
Man, and then the Pittsburgh Youth Network. I mean, those guys, they really do have one of the great youth ministry networks. And then, of course, the Coalition.
And who
have now far broader than just, Allegheny River Valley, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great stuff happening there. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So, yeah, we're sad to see you go from the area, but we'll get to see you out there. So, Marv, let's transition to you because I want people to hear about what's happening with you and youth ministry and youth ministry training before we start to talk about other matters. But you've got something equally exciting that you've stepped into. It's not on the horizon now. It's happening.
It is upon us. It's a dream that that God placed in my heart a number of years ago. An opportunity for us to rethink the way we train people for vocational youth ministry, and that is to really leverage the power of experiential integration. I find that a lot of formal youth ministry training programs have just sort of a token experiential piece, a short internship or a very minimal expectation of students to be involved. I wanted to turn that right upside down and actually make the experiential integration the heart of the learning experience. So we formed an apprenticeship-based program up here in Western Canada. Interestingly, we're getting some interest from American students who want to become part of the cohort that's forming this fall. The faculty is first class, who will be speaking into the lives of these fully experientially immersed students. Students will be doing 40 hours a week of ministry under the supervision of a veteran. It'll be an opportunity for them to learn on the job with great feedback, great accountability, and then over the course of a 2-year experiential immersion, they'll be coming to class 8 times every 3 months, coming to class. Walt, you and Duffy are both going to be part of the faculty. You'll be teaching youth culture. Walt, Duffy will be doing a class on theological integration and on communication skills. And so our students are going to have the best of both worlds, we believe. Full immersion in real life ministry, which will really give them a strong and accurate sense of what the rhythms of ministry are like, and of course the benefit of someone speaking into their lives in that context the whole time, and then they'll also have the benefit of 8 world-class professors who will speak into their lives at that more academic level. So great combination. You can learn more about it at coalitionforministry.com. It's exciting. We think this may be the future of vocational ministry education. The response that we've had to this program has been overwhelming. So we're pretty excited about, God giving us, first of all, the vision and then, allowing us the joy of launching this thing, learning a whole new way to think about doing ministry. So thanks for asking.
Yeah.
We'll certainly look forward to having each of you guys out there teaching in your area of strength and specialty. It should be a good time.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Well, listen, before we take a break, we're going to shift gears here, and we're going to come back and have a conversation about youth ministry. And to think ahead to that, the kinds of things we're going to talk about, all of us have been involved in youth ministry. All of us have been involved in training youth workers for years. So we've seen the good, we've seen the bad, we've seen the ugly. We've all been a part of all those things. And we want to talk about some areas in which maybe youth workers need to exercise some alertness, some discernment, to be thinking theologically, pragmatically about the way we do youth ministry and the messages that we send through those practices in youth ministry. So let's take a break, and folks, stick with us. We're going to come back. For our folks who are watching on Facebook Live right now, as the conversation gets going, we want you to stick with us, and it's your chance to throw some questions at these guys. So we'll look for and listen for questions, but stick with us. We'll be right back after the break. Here at CPYU, we want to help you help parents stay up to date on today's youth culture. One of our most popular resources is our monthly parent page. This four-page, full-color resource offers parents a timely, practical look into current youth culture trends, along with resources to help them parent their children and teens Christianly in today's rapidly changing youth culture. If you're a youth worker who would like to get this monthly resource into the hands of your parents, you can see a sample parent page and learn more by visiting cpyuparentpage.com. Welcome back, everybody, to Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller, and Chris Wagner's across the desk from me. Jason's not with us today, but that's okay. We've got Duffy Robbins and Marv Penner here, and we're talking about youth ministry. And Duffy, you and I had a little interchange back and forth yesterday via text on some of the matters we've talked about in the past, and some of the concerns we have. As we train people, we want to get them thinking theologically about things and practically about youth ministry. Go ahead and share that. Let's start the conversation around that, because I think this is a rich topic.
Well, I guess what sort of sparked my thinking about the topic yesterday was I read an article by Brett McCracken, and I know you know his name, but maybe for some of our listeners who don't, he is the author of the book Hipster Christianity, and he's a blogger over at the Gospel Coalition, and a guy who lives out in California, but a really good thinker, and so anyway, he wrote a blog about a week or so ago called Come Sunday, the Heretic. Well, Come Sunday is the name of a movie. The Heretic is the name of another movie, and then and the article is called Come Sunday, the Heretic, and the sad stories of quote unquote rebel pastors. And it's about some upcoming films, documentaries. One is about the guy that maybe folks have heard his name. This guy's name is Carlton Pearson. If you ever listen to This American Life, you should really download or listen to This American Life story of Carlton Pearson. He was a protege of Oral Roberts, real rising star in Pentecostal world, and he was kind of overwhelmed when the annihilation and massacre in Rwanda happened, and it made him sort of rethink his idea about universalism, and he began to assume that everybody's going to be saved because he just couldn't wrestle with, he just couldn't kind of reckon with how God could not offer salvation to these people who from Pearson's standpoint have had no chance to, you know, hear and reject and or receive the gospel. So that's his story. And then the other figure, probably a lot better known, is a guy named Rob Bell. And so these are movies that are coming out in the next month or so. Anyway, in that article, he was talking about the temptation for all of us to try so hard to be relevant that we end up being relative, that we end up kind of watering down or washing away the distinctives of Christian orthodoxy. And of course, McCracken's article is sort of a commentary on the movie, the documentary. I guess the one about Rob Bell sounds a little bit, from his description, a little bit like a kind of a hagiography, sort of a very positive kind of a pretty biased portrayal. But anyway, it's a temptation that all of us reckon with, regardless of those stories. We all know, I certainly know, the temptation to say, you know, do I mention that? Do I not say that? And how do I shape the message? And of course, to some extent, it's a question I ought to be asking, because it's a question that Paul asked. So it's not that it's wrong to think about how do I shape the message. What's wrong is when I reshape it into something that's not the shape of Orthodox Christianity. And so essentially that's kind of the question. I mentioned to you all that really what we're talking about is contextualization, but that I didn't imagine that would be a very catchy title for a podcast. But essentially it's the idea of how do we take our message that is in many ways unpopular and speak it in a way that's truthful, but at the same time, really engages the people we want to hear it. I mean, I hear these phrases. Well, I'll just stop there. I think that's
no,
the
general. No. What's the phrase? I want to hear what the phrase is. What's the?
Well, one of the phrases that I've heard, even from a dear friend, recently, is we're going to be on the wrong side of history. You know, that when we consider this issue, we're going to be on the wrong side of history, and to me, that is sort of a colloquial way, a popular way of talking about contextualization. But I always wonder, what does that mean? Like, what is the right side of history? What is the wrong side of history? I don't know what that means. If that means that everybody has voted, and we are supposed to go with the majority. Well, then the right side of history, we would all become Muslims. I mean, because it looks like right now the majority is voting in favor of Islam. So, but I just don't know what that phrase means. And C.S. Lewis has a great statement about this, which I can't quote, of course, verbatim, but he talks about how when people make that statement, they seem to deny or forget that is the decisions we're making right now that will determine how history is going to turn. And so to me, it's one of those phrases that raises the question of how do we shape our message? Do we shape it by the right and wrong side of history? And even if we were to agree, no, we want to be thoroughly orthodox and faithful to Scripture, there's still a whole lot of questions that raises.
Mm. How, well, just as an example, you know, what are some ways that you've seen this work itself out in youth ministry? And you don't have to mention, you know, dates, places, names, but general trends you're seeing now, because I resonate with this. I mean, I'm seeing it as well, and it deeply concerns me, and I think that it's a concern because many who are older, but I think increasingly many who are younger have not had or have not pursued the kind of theological training that would result in the type of discernment that would say, whoa, wait a minute, you know, we can't go down that road. I think instead there's more of a cultural accommodation in the way that we develop our theology and develop our strategies that come out of theology. And there's just not much thoughtfulness there. So maybe just to both of you, how have you seen this? Are there certain areas, hot issues?
It feels to me like we really need to look through those two lenses. Although they're closely related, I think we tend to think about them separately. There's the whole theological relativism that Duffy's just referenced. And of course, the danger of allowing our desire to be acceptable or to be palatable or whatever the right word is theologically. And then there's the lens of methodology. And I think that one is a lot more subtle. I think it's much more nuanced. And I think that's the one where for a lot of youth workers, the rubber kind of hits the road. Is just in our day-to-day practices of ministry, to what extent has our, need to be relevant, and we'll find that we're putting that in quotation marks as we keep talking here, but, to what extent has that desire to be acceptable in our methodology sort of reflected the notion that the medium is the message, that our methodology in many ways, is something that we need to look at closely because it communicates strongly the theology that underpins it or the lack of Well, I guess there's not a lack of theology. We all have a theology that drives our methodology. But many youth workers that I encounter really see no connection between their theological underpinnings and the methodology that they choose.
And one always informs the other. So if we
Absolutely.
Put, if we put relevance before theology, theology will be subservient to relevance and will morph and change as the culture morphs and changes, as styles morph and change. We know that happens quickly. But then the flip side, that you know, relevance has to is relevance. Does relevance follow theology? Do we develop our theology and say, okay, here are the parameters. Now, how can I present this in a way that can be heard? And that's what Duffy's talking about with the word contextualization.
Well, I think we need to be real careful not to make relevance the enemy.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, relevance is simply answering the questions that people are asking. If we make relevance the enemy, that certainly is a problem.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, we can make relevance a god, and that's the that's the flip side. You know, where that becomes our driving. Yeah. I've often said, and Duffy's heard this because I talk about this with our doctoral groups, that there's a huge difference between being culturally relevant and being culturally informed. And that if we're making the end relevance, it's easy for us in today's world to morph into assuming that relevance is captured in the way we curate ourselves, our appearance, the way we talk, the types of technologies we use, the way we curate our youth room, the color of the youth room, that whole thing. And with that, because styles change so much, we become enslaved to relevance, and all we're doing is curating, and not tending to theology, whereas being culturally informed is a way, like you said, Marv, that's how we listen to the culture. And by listening to the culture, listening to the gospel, as John Stott said, word and world, dual listening, we then are able to contextualize the message. And I think that what being culturally informed yields is relevance as a byproduct, even though we're not driving for that.
Yeah, that's a great lens that you create there, a distinction between being culturally relevant and culturally informed. But what if we created another distinction around relevance and said maybe cultural relevance isn't as important as relational or personal relevance is? And let's remember that youth ministry will always be about one kid at a time. And so for us to pursue relational relevance, what I mean by that is knowing what question each of the kids in our care is asking based on their story, based on their family, based on their experience, based on their context. Now relevance takes on a very different meaning. If I'm committed to being so aware of the unique individuality of every student in my care, then I can pursue relational relevance. And I think that my experience over the years is that means a great deal more to students. They would far rather have me know who their friends are than who their favorite band is.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I got a question. Got a question here. And by the way, before I get, this is a good question. So we've got a mug winner. Chris Trent's got
that
this great question. Yeah. Of course, I want to mention that Steve Stockman, who was on the last podcast, he's sending me messages complaining that he hasn't gotten a mug. And I just can't. I don't know if we can afford the postage to Belfast. Can we do that? I'll just send it to a 3D printer over there. I'll send him one.
Next time one of us goes, we'll have to take it.
I'm going to go over there in a couple of weeks. I'll take
you
it.
You are. You should. Yeah, we'll send it to you. Will you have room in your bags? You don't carry much luggage, Duffy.
You're right. Yeah, I might. You could break it down into like 7 or 8 parts.
Yeah. Okay, so here's a question. Chris Trent, this is a great question. He says, with some aspects of culture and Orthodox Christianity seemingly further and further apart, how will the church continue to stay relevant while still maintaining commitment to certain beliefs? Do you think commitment to relevance will be able to be maintained in the long run? Did you catch that?
Only if we define it as relational relevance.
Well, I think, well, Well, you want to elaborate on that a little bit more, Marv, or are you just want to have phrase?
Yeah, I think we get caught up in the notion that relevance means cultural coolness. And relevance in ministry has always been about whether people feel heard, whether they feel understood, whether we know their stories, whether they feel like there's someone available and willing to engage with them at the level of their reality. So if the pendulum swings to defining relevance as being culturally compatible, then we're going to be in trouble. If we define relevance as being relationally engaged, then we're going to become more and more powerful.
Yeah, I think we have to be relevant, and I like what you said a few minutes ago, Marv, about asking the questions that they're asking. I think about Paul's, statement in 1 Corinthians 9, where he said, to the Jews I became as a Jew in order to win the Jews, to those under the law I became one under the law, though not myself being under the law, and I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, and then so forth. And what's interesting is he actually says here, to the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. And three times in one verse there he uses the word all, which suggests that Paul takes very, very seriously relating, which is the root word of relevance. In other words, how do I relate to these people? All things to all people, that by all means I might save some. But then the next statement he says, I do all of this for the sake of the gospel. And so I think we can't afford to just say, gosh, this is getting really difficult or tedious or inconvenient. Let's just give up on being relevant. Let's give up on speaking to the questions of the day. And let's just be faithful to the gospel. As Paul makes very clear in 1 Corinthians, the gospel isn't good news if you don't speak to the bad news. I mean, he says the message of Christ and him crucified is his one message. And then he goes through the entire letter never mentioning Christ and him crucified until chapter 15, when he talks about the resurrection. So I think for Paul, it cannot be an either or at all.
This is good.
Yeah, fair enough.
This is good. Hey, let's take a break. We're going to come back and continue the conversation, talking to Duffy Robbins and Marv Penner about relevance and relativity in youth ministry. When do we cross the line? Can we cross the line? How do we cross the line? And what are some ways that we can encourage each other to stay true to the message of the gospel? We'll be right back with more after this. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate their emerging sexuality to the glory of God, we've launched a sexual integrity initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our Sexual Integrity Initiative and a growing number of resources for free by visiting the website at sexualintegrityinitiative.com. Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters, talking with Duffy Robbins and Marv Penner about youth ministry, and we're talking about being relevant. When do we cross a line? How important is relevance? Do we compromise truth when we're relevant? I mean, these are great questions to be asking, and I know, it's practically speaking, youth workers need to be dealing with these things. I mean, my sense is that we're probably thinking less theologically in conscious ways, but as a result, we're still thinking theologically. We just don't know how we're thinking, and the push has to be, Let's tilt the scales back to thinking theologically and then looking at how to bring, truth to life in relevant ways in our culture. But as we've been talking about this, a question I have as we come back is, is there a point where we just say truth is truth and I can't make it any more relevant than it is, or I risk compromising the truth. And I think my opinion is we've done that sometimes, and we're doing it more and more, especially in some of the hot issues. But how do you guys respond to that? How would you advise youth workers on that?
Well, to answer your question, I want to go back to something Marv said too, but to answer your question, I think there are several principles that that can kind of help us in this activity. And we won't have time today to go over them, but it seems to me that one of the principles that can help us in particular answer that question is what I call the principle of tradition, which we've all talked about before, just when we're together. But the principle is simply this: when it comes to translating scripture to life, in other words, trying to help a teenager or an adult or a person in any age at any age of history to bring it to life, none of us sees the whole picture. None of us sees the whole picture. So although our faith is based on scripture alone, we never read the scriptures alone. And what this reminds us, excuse me, is that we really, one of the ways we guard ourselves from the biases and the skewed lens of our own cultural moment is by referring or leaning into the tradition of the church. What have our brothers and sisters for 2,000 years thought about this passage and about these issues? Which is not to say that in 2,000 years they've all thought rightly about it, you know, as well. But the fact of the matter is, if you sort of, that the Holy Spirit does have a history, and that over the course of time there's a corrective, sort of a feature that in the church where a certain doctrines or ideas are deemed not relevant to, or not true to scripture. And so slavery would be one example of that. But to me, that would be one of the principles that youth workers would use to sort of, think this thing through and hammer it out. So now, in other words, the question should be, what is it about this unique cultural moment in the history of Homo sapiens where we are obsessed with cat videos? What is it that makes us think this gives us a moral clarity on issues? And so we should be suspicious of something where we are nominating a new idea that all of our forefathers and mothers were too blind or primitive to discern. So that would be one of the ways I would sort of do a corrective. And I'd say, if in answer to your question, Walt, if I am going against a tradition of the church, then I'm going to have to speak forthrightly about this, even if it's countercultural, even if it's not what people want to hear, even if some well-meaning people say I'm on the wrong side of history. I'm actually going back and thinking about history that's real, history that has already been written, not the history that is yet to be written. And the history that is yet to be written is going to depend very much on the decisions we make today. So to defend the choices of the future by talking about the history that might be is kind of ludicrous, that the history that might be will be determined by the choices we make today. So to me, that's one of the, that's one of the ideas that I, and if you read Jude 1, so I was to, look at that, that's a passage of scripture in which I think Paul sort of points us in that direction. The faith once for all delivered to the saints.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I you know, and I'm thinking about some of these issues right now. Certainly on the sexuality issue, certainly on the gender issue, that tends to be right now the hot issue that's up for grabs, and there's a lot of controversy and a lot of disagreement in the culture. I heard a youth worker passed on to me. They were to talk last week, and I can't remember who gave the talk, but they were to talk last week where they were challenged to think through the fact that, Christian Smith's moralistic therapeutic deism has really And you know, when we stand back and we look at that, we're going, yeah, that's not biblical faith. I mean, I think all three of us, when he came out with that in Soul Searching years ago, we saw that. We all said, yeah, that's what's, you know, that's what we're seeing in kids. That's what we're seeing in adults. That's what we have tendencies towards in our culture today ourselves. But they were saying that's just not in kids. The speaker was saying they're seeing it now in the world of those who are doing training in youth ministry or who are leading the charge theologically in youth ministry, that what's driving them is the moralistic thing, thus a necessary emphasis on things like justice, but maybe sometimes taken to an extreme or done in a way that's not totally right on. I mean, and please don't mishear me here on that. But that's the moralistic part, you know, being a good person. But the therapeutic, you know, just feeling good. And so that shapes our theology, that we move away from truth and say to kids, look, God, you know, God's here to serve you. And the way he serves you, the deism part, the way he serves you is just the therapeutic by making you feel good. So do whatever feels right to you. And we're seeing that. And that's where I think, I mean, that's one area where I thought that was brilliant. Because that's one area where I see relevance trumping truth and righteousness.
Isn't it fascinating, Walt, that the writer of the Proverbs recognized that thousands of years ago when he says there's a way that seems right, but in the end it leads to destruction. So this natural tendency we have to getting it wrong, to literally getting our direction wrong. And not being conscious of where that direction is taking us, man, it feels like that is part of the human condition.
Yeah.
So this isn't a 2018 issue. It feels like it's been there in the heart of who we are from the beginning.
Yeah.
I remember, Marv, a few years ago, you wrote a blog or something on relevance. I can't remember where it was that I read it, but
yeah, I wrote an article in the Youth Worker Journal called "Redefining Relevance."
Yeah,
and it had to do with this whole notion of being relationally or personally relevant as our highest priority. You know, in no way suggesting that being culturally informed or culturally sensitive is inappropriate. But that what students are actually looking for in a youth worker is a commitment to them as a person, not a commitment to their cultural values.
Well, and that's where, you know, like with that, Marv, that's where I think, you know, the great example, I bring her up all the time, but one of the great examples of this is our dear friend Verna Klein, who has been doing youth ministry since 1948. And there's nothing about Verna's appearance, pardon me, Verna, if you're listening, but nothing about Verna's appearance that makes her relevant. She's an 80-some-year-old woman who is from a Church of the Brethren background here in central Pennsylvania. You know, she wears a covering. I mean, how many people do you see doing that in youth culture today? You just don't. And yet, Verna has had
I've seen Mark recovering from time to time, it's actually very attractive.
Well, I'm glad I haven't seen that yet, and I don't want to see it more. But you know, that's where, like with Verna, I've watched her interact with students, and I've talked to students about Verna, and it is what you're talking about, Marv. She is relevant because she's relationally connected, and I think, you know, Verna. You know, Verna's always been a learner, and that's one of the things I love about Verna, and she still continues to be a learner, but she's learning about people, and she's listening, and she's loving people, and then she doesn't compromise truth, and she can lay it on straight to students, and they listen to her. They love her. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing, so, yeah.
Well, here's my observation about where this becomes a practical issue. When youth workers begin with imposed outcomes, and what I mean by that is a lot of us in youth ministry feel all sorts of pressure to fill the room, to attract new families to our churches, to meet the budget, you know, to be the most popular ministry in town. So when we begin our conversation about youth ministry methodology with those outcomes, then we feel all sorts of pressure to, you know, like Paul says in Romans 12, too, to be squeezed into the world's mold, you know, to compromise in those areas. When we start with theology and let that inform our methodology, then we get to those fundamentals of relational relevance, of listening well, of inviting kids into the family. I think one of the best pieces that's been done on relevant ministry lately has been CHAP's work on adoptive youth ministry. You talk about a relevant response to the need of a generation, and I think it really sort of epitomizes a theologically thoughtful, theologically grounded approach to ministry relevance that invites students of every stripe into community, into the family. You know, at the end of the day, I think that's where theology will lead us if we read it well.
Hey, I wanna honor you guys your time because I know we're coming down here to the point where you have to take off. Duffy, I think you have a Tupperware party to get to or something, and Marty, yeah, you've got to apply essential oils. So
yeah, there's some stuff we're covering.
It's urgent. But I want to – two questions stand. One, Darren Derrick, there's a great question here on Facebook Live. He's asking, how do I encourage another youth worker who has made relevance so important that it has become a badge of honor and maybe an idol? How do we talk through that? That's a big question, I know, but maybe a couple of short thoughts on that. You know, how would you approach another youth worker? He's asking for a friend probably, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I do think you go back. I mean, you know what Mar just said about if you have imposed outcomes, because then you're playing to the consumer,
right?
You know, starting with the audience, and whenever you start with the audience instead of the message, you know that's going to cause a distortion. Now we can't ignore the audience, right. Not at all, but. You've got to start with the message and what you're trying, the essence of what you're trying to communicate. Then that audience, and think about who they are, what are their questions and stuff. And so I would encourage Garrett to, you know, to say to his friend, hey, what is the ultimate message that you're trying to communicate? And, you know, and earlier today, Marv said about the, you know, the methodology or the medium is a part of the message as well. I think this is in practical terms, this is where a lot of youth workers, we can betray, we can end up betraying what we intend to say by, I mean, these are hard questions, but you know, we use part of a movie that we wouldn't want the students to watch, or maybe it's playing one song from a, you know, a CD that's got seven other just songs that objectify women or whatever. And it ultimately kind of goes back to what is the message I want to communicate? Everything's got to turn to that. That's the true north. That's where it's all got to be led by.
Mm. I would love to have a conversation sometime. Boy, I'm really going to throw gasoline on the fire now, but this is a question I've been asking. What are we communicating, and how are we nurturing kids when our youth room is a stage with audience seating? I mean, that's an interesting question. I think relates to this as well. So,
yeah, architecture is a part of the message.
Powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let me end with this, because what we do for our listeners is, if you go to our podcast page at cpyu.org and you find the page, dedicated page for Youth Culture Matters, you can click there and get to it. We will list everything that's been mentioned on the podcast. So we've got some articles that have been mentioned already, and I'm just curious, you guys, I'll let you have the final word here. Anything you would point people to read off the top of your head that would relate to this, that would be helpful to a youth worker on the matters that we've discussed? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I would suggest I would suggest Charles Kraft, K-R-A-F-T, who talks about cross-cultural communication. I think that's the name of one of his main books. And he's a missiologist. So he's got a much bigger and broader picture of these questions. But they also are questions that have been wrestled with for a long time. Youth ministry, we're not the first people to wrestle with that. And so I would say Charles Kraft. In very practical terms, in the book that Doug and I wrote, Speaking to Teenagers, in which I did most of the heavy lifting, frankly, that book, we have a section in there about the emotional element of the message, the audience, and kind of how that plays into the whole thing, and communication, and how can we do relevance without being relative. So those two books, from a youth ministry world and then from a broader.
Yeah. Marv, you got anything?
And yeah, what I would say is if we're talking about starting with theology, I just want to encourage youth workers to actually start to read some theology. And don't be afraid of reading some of the dead guys. There is some really significant stuff. Guys like Bonhoeffer, guys like Lewis, guys like G.K. Chesterton, Orthodoxy. Some of these sort of fundamental and frankly quite readable books on fundamental theological matters. You know, The Cost of Discipleship. A great starting text, just to sort of understand. A.W. Tozer. These guys are still with us because they wrote things that were substantive. And it goes back to what Duffy was saying about the rich tradition. And if we have no idea what that tradition is, it's really, really tough for it to inform the way we do our ministry today. So, read and be informed theologically. Talk with people who are a little further down the road, and get some training that's theologically rooted.
That's good.
The thing you guys do at Gordon Conwell, the fact that you have two youth ministry specialists who have teamed up with a theologian, like a hardcore theologian, Adonis, didn't know anything about youth ministry when you guys started, but he knew everything about theology. And so to have him as part of that conversation every single day you do your training demonstrates to me that you guys take this thing seriously.
Yeah. We should get Adonis's book on the Atonement on there, Duffy, right?
There you go, man.
Yeah. I just saw Maggie peek in behind you there. That was good. I saw somebody moving. Either it was Maggie or yeah.
Yeah, she lives here with me.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
That's awesome. Hey, a couple other books I'll mention, then we'll cut off. And I think Duffy would agree. Albert Walter's book, Creation Regained, is a nice little book on the flow of biblical history and theology, creation, fall, redemption, restoration. We have our students read that at Gordon-Conwell.
Is there a podcast that you don't recommend that book?
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to tell you something, Marv. Here's the thing. Yeah, you haven't listened to all our podcasts. You know I don't recommend it everywhere. But we've had students read that, and they come back and they say, that is a game changer. Right? Right, Duffy? I mean, that book's a game changer.
Sure. And no, then, it's also a small book, which is nice.
Yeah, small book. Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that facetiously. I mean, it really is not a huge.
Yeah. So Creation Regained's good. Another one I'd mention is Cornelius Plantinga has a book called Engaging God's World, which is some basic theology in the same strain that I think is good and would really reorient or maybe reboot your thinking a little bit. And then on this cultural thing, since Duffy mentioned one he did heavy lifting on, I'll mention one I did, and that's called Engaging the Soul of Youth Culture, Bridging Teen Worldviews and Christian Truth. And while the book is 10 years old, the principles in it on culture and contextualization remain, I trust, true today. I mean, I really believe that. It's what we teach when we talk about contextualization and Paul's trip through Athens in Acts 17. So that book is one that can be read as well. Well, thanks, guys. I know your time is
thanks,
up.
Yes. Good to see you both.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much. And Marv,
thanks
hope you have a great
well.
Day. Don't.
Thanks,
I hope the boat. I hope the boat floats. Duffy, I hope your airplane gets in the air. And I'll just go for a bike ride today. That's all I got. So,
All right.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.
Thank you, Chris.
All right.
And God bless you all till we're back for the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.